Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brandes, and I am joined by Ray Kuhn. How are you doing, Ray?
Good, Ben. I'm excited to get back into the swing of things for the baseball.
Yeah, I'm excited, too. This is our first baseball podcast of the year together. Have you been enjoying the off season?
I have been a little busy. Had myself a kid, so...
You yourself had the kid?
I did.
That's pretty impressive. It's like Arnold Schwarzenegger, almost.
I mean, the medical stuff is just really going crazy these days, but yeah. So she has a steady diet of MLB Network and Where Will Bryce Harper and Manny Machado Sign? And I mean, I guess at this point it's questionable by her first birthday if we'll know.
Yeah, it seems pretty questionable would you be surprised if we were the first ones to break the news because something happened during our podcast? How great would that be?
That would be pretty exciting. And honestly, at this point, nothing would surprise me with those two.
Yeah. Where do you think one of them will sign? Or both of them?
I think after all this dancing, Harper's going to end up back in Washington. Machado's going to end up either in San Diego or Chicago.
Great. And Ray, what is your Twitter handle?
It is Ray_Kuhn_28.
All right, we are also joined by Mr. Scott Chu. How are you doing, Scott?
Hey, not too bad. Not too bad at all.
Scott, this is my first time ever hearing you on a podcast, podcasting with you, talking to you directly other than sometimes through Facebook. So, how are you? Are you excited? Are you excited to work with the infamous Benjamin Brennis? I know I can be annoying, as Ray will say.
Yeah, man, I'm pretty excited to be doing a regular podcast. I've been on a couple of the team previews for Friends of Fantasy Benefits, so that's about it. I'm kind of excited just to be doing it regularly to like sort of keep track of it throughout the season, because usually if I ever get the chance to be on a podcast, it's for like one day and I just get super excited, dive in deep, and then I don't have to do it again. So I just go back to my regular fantasy baseball management.
Well, I mean, we as industry people definitely know that management can be tough, because we seemingly all have like 10 plus teams, it feels like. So there's going to be a lot of different management going on.
Oh, the biggest lesson I learned is if you're going to play in a lot of leagues, that's okay. But don't play across more than like two or three sites.
Yep.
Because once you get on the fourth or the fifth site, like one of those teams gets totally forgotten about and you feel like a huge jerk.
Yeah, I am currently on three different websites, so I feel like that's my max. But the good thing is I'll always remember to go to Fantrax. Last year, my Fantrax league that I was in was the back end one, and I didn't care about it as much. But now that we have the 30 team staff league in there, I'm going to be on there quite a bit. So we'll see what happens. But Scott, what is your Twitter handle?
It is Chusif Esquire, so Chuseph Esquire. The silly things lawyer calls themselves. So, just at Chusif Esquire.
And where do you think Harper and Machado sign?
I'm pretty much in the same boat as Ray, except I'm not sure which one's going to go where. I think one's going to Philly. I really want to see one go to San Diego, just because I think that San Diego, especially for Harper, is a really nice landing place. It's good for the team and for the player, as long as they pay him whatever ungodly figure he wants.
I also think that if one of them went to San Diego, it would cause Chuck's head to explode.
And we always want that, so.
Yeah. And I can be reached at BBrennisFWFB. Guys, today we're going to be talking about players that are inside the top 100 of an NFBC ADP from January 15th to today's current date. And we want to say some players that we don't believe we will draft, so players that we will either avoid either for reasons that we don't believe in them or that we believe that their value is too high. But let's jump right in. Let's start with you, Ray. Who is your first player?
All right. This player, I think we have to add the caveat first that his value is a little different in a batting average league as compared to an OBP league, because in a batting average league, the fact that he does not walk, only 4.5% of the time last year, obviously hinders his value. But at the same time, you can't just say, okay, fine, he doesn't walk, so I'm going to take him off my board or greatly lower him in an OBP league because walks count. Just because you're talking about a batting average league, I think walks still come into play because that just means if he's not walking and he's not going to get a hit every time, we know he strikes out a ton, he's just going to make more outs. And his batting average is obviously going to go down a little bit, and that's Javi Baez. Last year, I mean, he's still young. He has the talent, but I think last year will go down as his best major league season. And right now, with an ADP of 14, I can't sit there and say, I am going to start my team off with Javi Baez, who strikes out 26% of the time, walks 4.5% of the time, and I'm not going to bank on a 24% home run to fly ball rate repeating. I mean, he does bring power and speed plus eligibility all over the infield to the table. So that's obviously a plus. He does pretty much double up the league average on barrel rate, 12.6%, with the league average being 6.1%. But the other thing is, his launch angles last year was 9.2%. League average launch angle is 10.9%. So, yeah, he did come through, and he did hit those 34 homers, but I'm not sure he reaches 30 homers again. I mean, yeah, if he hits 25 to 28 homers, steals another 20 bags, even all the projection metrics on Fangraphs have him coming down to the 15 to 17 range. So even let's just say he goes 28 homers, 18 stolen bases, you're looking at a pretty damn good player, even if his average drops down to like 260, 270. But it's not somebody that I want to start my team off with. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, Scott, what do you think? I'll go last because I've had hatred for Javi Baez for a while, just ever since he burned me when he first came up. So I'll go last.
All right. I don't mind saying that you're not going to take him because of the price. However, what I will say is, as much as last year might end up looking like the outlier, it's certainly not because of luck. When he was getting that barrel on the ball, he was doing a ton of damage. If you look at his X stats, it was all legit. He had one of the highest high drive rates in the league. You pointed out the barrels; they're very similar metrics, but his expected average, his expected slugging, it all pretty much lined up with what he did in real life. I mean, really, for me, the biggest issue is how much he chases pitches. A guy that chases as much as Javi Baez does, he chases as much or more than anybody in the league. There's such a small margin for error there. It's very plausible to watch him go a month and just not make contact because, you know, maybe something's a little off in his swing. Maybe he's not seeing the ball or picking up the ball quite right. And when you swing at everything, though, you know, any little hiccup in your, you know, plate approach absolutely gets abused by the way pitchers are these days. So I'd stay away simply because to me, it looks like he could very much be a huge disappointment of a lot, you know, of all the guys going in the first round that end up being a bust for something other than injury. Javi Baez really sticks out to me as a guy that we might be looking at come October and say, yeah, he really didn't work out. I guess he does chase too much.
Yeah, for me, Javi is someone who, yes, I was a big fan of him, and I'm still a big fan of him, but if you're playing in an OBP league, for sure, he's someone that I don't want to take. And even in a hits league, given his propensity to strike out a ton and the fact that he doesn't take a walk, you almost have to just throw anything, you know, outside of the zone just a little bit with some movement, and if he can't hit it, then he's still going to be swinging. And while it is nice that he has multiple position eligibility and he has power and speed, last year being his career year, like Ray was saying, is something that isn't inconceivable. And it's just tough for me to take someone who I can't trust 100% of the time to be a first or a second round pick, depending on how large the league is. And while he's young and can still figure it out, I'm not sure if he's really ever going to be able to get rid of those strikeouts. Maybe he cuts them by 5%, but even if he cuts them by 5%, he's still striking out at quite a high rate. So it's someone who I completely agree with Ray on that I would look to avoid him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have him in one league because I have him as a $4 keeper from last year. So, I mean, I'll be, you know, I'm not against the guy, but if you're going to tell me I could take him in the third round, yeah, definitely not first or second.
Yeah, and obviously it always depends on the value, but since we're looking at the ADP and he's currently ranked 13th with an ADP of 13.93, it's someone that could easily go into top 10, someone that could easily go into top 20, or someone who goes maybe like 21, 22, as we've seen that the max pick is 21 and the minimum pick is 9. It's just it's tough for us to actually go and take someone like that when all of us know that he's going to strike out. And if he doesn't repeat that home run to fly ball ratio, then we're looking at someone who's possibly giving you fourth round value, depending on how much he steals, if he doesn't keep up that high home run rate. Scott, who's your first player?
The 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide, The Fantasy Benefit, is the largest and most complete fantasy draft guide on the market. With featured writers from Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Baseball HQ, Baseball Prospectus, and Fangraphs, and many more, you will get tons of information on how to start your own league, draft strategies for roto, points, categories, NFBC, best ball, and DFS. There are tiers for every position, and 30 team previews, including 30 team prospect previews, breaking down the top prospects from each team. There are ranks for every position, for prospects, for first-year player drafts. This is the most in-depth guide that fantasy baseball has to offer. And not only that, we'll be updating it all draft season in the ebook and PDF. You can get this on Amazon.com in ebook form for $7.50 or in paperback for $13.99. Don't want an ebook? Don't want a paperback? Just want a PDF? You can order it by emailing friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com and I will send you an updated copy every week until the start of opening day. Get your 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits draft guide called The Fantasy Benefit today.
So my first player is it's actually a starting pitcher. I am probably not going to be taking Madison Bumgarner. He's going around ADP 76. And, you know, just a lot of big red flags to me. I'm going to ignore the injuries for a little bit, even though like that is a major reason to be concerned just because his injuries aren't the normal type. You can't really project out a guy getting, you know, mangled in a dirt bike accident or whatever. But for Madison Bumgarner, two things happened last year that really concerned me. The first is that the strikeouts dropped. 2016 was a long time ago. He was striking out over a batter in an inning. He was below that mark last year. And I don't think that had anything to do with luck. He seems to just be a little step off from what he was after missing so much time over the last 2 years with injuries. And then, you know, I like to look at ERA indicators, from the prior season just to sort of determine, you know, we know that ERA is really fluky. So we have stuff like FIP and Sierra and StatCast FIP to try to balance those out. And all of those metrics say he was not a 3.26 ERA guy that he showed last year, but, you know, his 3.99 FIP, his 4.42 Sierra and his 4.23 StatCast FIP sort of indicate that he got really fortunate on balls in play. And, you can't project that going forward. So if he ends up being a 4 ERA, you know, I see him more as a 4 ERA guy striking out less than a batter an inning. Even if he gives me 200 innings, I can get a guy like that much later in the draft than pick 76.
Ray, remind me to not try to trade Scott if he ever joins our league, Madison Bumgarner.
Don't worry, you still will. Your reputation as a relentless trader, and we can take relentless whatever connotation we want, definitely precedes you.
Yeah. Well, I think so far, Bradley and Charles have taken that mantle from me this offseason because for the last month and a half, I haven't really tried to do anything. Those guys are crazy.
Because everybody knows that trading with you most likely isn't going to end well.
Well, people still do it anyway. But I can agree with what Scott is saying, that inside of an ADP of a top 100, Madison Bumgarner is someone that you may want to avoid. But do you think that there's any chance that if he goes into the season fully healthy and he stays healthy, Scott, that he can't possibly rebound? But do you think that it's just too many miles on the arm, kind of like a Felix Hernandez? Or do you think that it's just because every time that he's been healthy-ish over the last two seasons, the numbers haven't been great?
yeah, I don't want to say he can't rebound. He's, you know, he's always been a gamer. He's been a big time pitcher for a long time. It's the type of thing that it's totally for me. I can't pay the price because I haven't seen it. I'm not saying it couldn't be done. If he throw, I mean, how surprised could you really be if he comes out and throws 180 to 200 innings with a 3.5 ERA? I don't think he's going to go back to the guy we saw in his peak, you know, the 2013 to 2016 Madison Bumgarner that had a sub 3 ERA and striking out a guy an inning, not walking a lot of people. I mean, that was a long time ago. Those days are gone. But could he come back and be a, you know, a very good pitcher? Sure. I just don't want to pay a price for a guy that might be good.
No, I get it. I mean, his ADP, much like others in this range, are a little all over the place. You know, he's got a low 49 and a high of 106. So there's clearly people who don't believe in him and clearly some leagues that don't because he fell all the way to 106. And then there are some leagues that really do because they picked him as a top 50 pick. I think
or somebody thinks it's 2015 again.
Well, you could have something like that. I like Madison Bumgarner. I think that if he's healthy, he's going to give you around 180 innings. If he's able to stay healthy for the entire year and not have a fluke injury, those strikeouts, you know, I guess that there's a chance he could get a strikeout per inning. But I did see some numbers that his pitches were losing some swing strike rates, except for his changeup, which seemed to improve about 3% from last year. So we will see how he does. Obviously, last year he got the injury trying to ground a ball up the middle. So hopefully he doesn't do anything like that in spring training this year. But I think there's a chance for him to be able to bounce back. I just am not willing to risk going along and drafting him because at this point he's likely your fifth round pick in some leagues, maybe at worst he's around the seventh, and you know he's probably going to be your third starting pitcher, maybe your second, depending on how you depending on the size of the league. And I can't really put that all into my boat unless I'm in like a 20 plus team league and I'm looking for some upside. That's really the only way that you can do it, and you're also potentially guaranteeing yourself of not being able to compete if he has a pretty bad year. So you're almost on two extremes at that point. So
yeah, he's a late fifth, early sixth pick on his ADP in a 15 team league. So I would say most likely he's going to be your second starter. So based on that, I can't necessarily disagree. He had six seasons of 200 plus innings. The last 2 years, little over 100 innings in both. He's lost about a mile of average velocity on his fastball over the last 2 years compared to prior. But, I mean, again, we're talking about a guy that was doing it at, like, 92. It's not like Bumgarner was hitting high 90s. But, I mean, again, if you lose a mile per hour or if you fastball, you have all those innings under your belt. It's not necessarily a good thing. The control took a hit last year. If you look at baseball HQ, their expected ERA metrics compared to his actual ERA, really the last 3 years, he's far surpassed what their expected ERA said he was going to be. And last year he did it by a little over a run, so that was the highest margin. I mean, part of it might be the fact that he was injured and he was coming back and he wasn't necessarily having a clean off season or a clean spring training. But I mean, again, I agree with the fact that I'm probably not going to draft Bumgarner. But I think this just illuminates the point that you got to make sure, probably the first four rounds, that you get your top two starting pitchers. Because say, okay, fine, you get to round five, and you don't want to take Bumgarner at his ADP. Starting pitchers after him are Berrios, Foltynewicz, Germán Marquez, Zach Wheeler, Miles Michaelos, David Price, Luis Castillo. And that brings us, Castillo's at an ADP of 111. And then the next one is Kyle Hendricks at 121. You can make an argument for a few of those guys over Bumgarner. But based on track record, Bumgarner certainly has them beat. So, I mean, so to me, it's more of an indication of how I'm going to play my draft strategy than anything else.
Yeah, and that's basically all you're able to do is if you're in a position where he's someone that you can afford to take the risk, say you're in a 10-team league, which there's obviously a decent amount of people who still play in the 10-team league, and he is available at, say, pick 95, and you already have two starting pitchers who you are pretty confident in, and you have a bunch of pitchers or a bunch of hitters that you're confident in. If he's someone who's a high upside play that you can afford to take the risk and you want to take the risk and there's not a lot of other good options, I could consider taking him there. It just really depends on how your draft strategy is, the size of your league, and exactly how comfortable you are with taking someone who could be a top 10 starting pitcher who could also be a top 50 starting pitcher.
But would you call him a high upside play at this point in his career? I feel like there's more risk than upside.
Yes, there is, but he has the ability to be a high upside player that some other players that are at that spot in the draft may not necessarily have. They may not have the ability to be a top 10. Like, if you were picking him and it was between him and a Jose Peraza or a Miles Mikolas, you know that Miles Mikolas likely isn't going to be a top 10 starting pitcher unless he has a season that's slightly better than last year and you play in a quality starts league.
But at that point, why don't you just then wait another two rounds and then just go down and get like a Chris Archer at 137, Happ at
135. Well, everyone continues to think Chris Archer's good, and he's been terrible for years. So I don't know if I can necessarily say that I'd want to wait two rounds to pick up a Chris Archer as opposed to taking a massive Bumgarner now.
But, I mean, then you can just really load up on bats. I mean, or you go somebody to 20 picks later like a Zach Wheeler, and if you look at what he did for most of last season, and you want to talk about upside, or you wait another 20 picks and you have Luis Castillo. To me, if I'm taking a risk on Bumgarner, I'd rather wait two or three rounds and take a risk on a younger starting pitcher. I mean, what do you think, Scott?
I mean, I guess for me, on my personal board, I've got Madison Bumgarner in the same tier as Kyle Hendricks and J.A. Happ, because I see them all as similar pitchers. I think Happ will strike out more batters than Bumgarner. Hendricks might strike out a little less, but these are guys that are supposed to be like solid floor guys for you. You know, they shouldn't be too bad, but they're also going, way later, 50, 60 picks later, you can get a Kyle Hendricks or a J.A. Happ, who can get wins, who can get everything you're hoping to get from Madison Bumgarner at a much cheaper price.
Let me ask you guys this. You can finish. I didn't mean to cut you off.
It's really more of just I don't see a scenario in any leagues I play in where Mad Bum's going to fall far enough for me to consider him with the guys I would normally consider him with.
Does your value of Madison Bumgarner change if it's a quality starts league or a wins league? Does him in a wins league even depress you further or depress his value further because of how bad the Giants could potentially be and how many wins Madison Bumgarner would likely have if he was a starter as opposed to if he was in a quality starts league?
I guess maybe a little. It's funny when you look at the pitchers that he's going around in terms of ADP. So, like Mike Clevinger is going a little before him. Jose Berrios, Michael Fultonevich, Marquez, those guys. If I'm taking Mad Bum instead of one of those guys, it's certainly not because of wins or quality starts. And it's probably more of believing in that ERA floor. So for me, the quality starts and wins don't move the needle too much. I mean, I think it was a big part of his value in his prime, but if you're drafting him now, I don't think it's because you think he's going to get you 15 to 20 wins because the Giants are no good. If you're taking him, it's got to be because you believe in a few of the strikeouts coming back and because you think he can continue to sort of beat the metrics and continue to post these low 3 ERAs.
Fair enough. Let's move into the next player, and it's going to be me talking about Michael Fultonevich. Fultonevich is someone who last year everyone knew had somewhat of a lucky season, I guess you could say. I don't necessarily believe that. While I believe that the Braves are still going to be good, I still feel like the division is potentially getting a little better. I feel that the Mets, while they haven't made drastic improvements, have improved a little bit. The Nationals' offense hasn't really improved, especially if Harper doesn't return. We think that there's a good chance that he does, but if he doesn't return, then that offense still has some decent pieces, and I believe that the Phillies have gotten a decent amount better just by some of the moves that they have made, and they obviously had the potential to bring in Harper. Do you guys believe that Mike Foltynewicz is someone that can repeat those numbers last year, that he, even with a high BABIP, he's able to keep a low ERA and a low WHIP for the fact that he only goes about five innings a game? And then to counter that point, is he usable in a quality starts league, or does he drop significantly in value because of how deep he goes into games? Right?
First of all, you got to give me props for that segue as I integrated Foltynewicz into the Bumgarner discussion. But as far as Foltynewicz, I think he certainly benefited from a 251 BABIP against last year. That's number one. The xFIP 377, run high or whatever. But it doesn't, again, it's all about value. I have Foltynewicz as a $2 keeper in a league. I'm going to keep him, and if he pitches to his xFIP of 377, striking out 9 or 10 batters an inning, I'm going to be happy with that for $2. But if you're taking him where you got to take him based on his ADP, I'm just not sure. I mean, he walks about, you know, 3 1/3 guys per 9 innings. It's really not great. You like to see him get more than 43% ground balls. He jumped 30 innings last year, so then you can talk about that whole Verducci effect kind of thing. He went from 154 to 183. Like, do we think he's going to be able to take that next step? Do we think they're going to hold him at the 183? Didn't make 31 starts last year. I mean, to me, Foltynewicz is a nice pitcher, but I'm not sure how he's become the pitcher where he's going off the board where he is. And I'm probably going to bypass him to go for some of the other guys that we just mentioned when we were talking about Bumgarner.
What about you, Scott?
You know, for me, the biggest change that Folty made last year is that he managed to keep the ball in the yard. He's always been on my radar because of, you know, he's got that high heat. He can throw that fastball. I mean, he'll touch 100 every season pretty much with it. He can really get hitters, who haven't seen him before, a little surprised with that. But the big thing for me is, you know, keeping the ball in the yard. For the number of guys that he walks, which is, I think, what plays into his shorter outings every game, his pitch counts can get a little out of control just because of how many free passes he gives. But if you're going to walk more, you can be successful walking, you know, three batters per nine innings, as long as you're not giving up the home run ball. And in seasons past, his ERA was always inflated because he was giving up big home runs on almost all of his pitches. And last year, he found a way to use that slider a little more often than he had in the past. Actually, a lot more often than he had in the past. And, you know, batters really had a hard time getting that ball out of the park. You know, a 4.4% home run to fly ball rate on that pitch. A lot of infield fly balls on that pitch. 42.2% infield fly ball rate on the slider. I think that was a big part of the change that he made. And that, I think, is how he's going to be successful going forward, is using that slider, using his off-speed stuff to complement the fastball and keeping the ball in the yard. His slider was, again, I know I've already talked a lot about it. It was a really good pitch for him. And if you believe in him at his current price, you know, he's kind of in a little blob of pitchers for me. So I haven't really taken him yet just because I like other guys in that area like Zach Wheeler. But you know, if you watch him and you believe in that slider and you think that he can continue to get so many swings and misses outside of the zone with that slider and so many sort of bad hacks at it, then he should be able to keep the ball in the yard and he can return the value that you're getting there.
Yeah, I think it's a little tough for me to just say I can blindly go in and take him expecting similar stats to last year, just because from year to year we've seen that BABIP can be super fluky. You've seen that there's a propensity that while he didn't walk people this year, you know, he may walk people next year. Look at how Dallas Keuchel had it a couple of years ago. A couple of years ago, he was able to get tons of pitches that were on the edges, given as called strikes, and then he won a Cy Young, and then the next year he couldn't get anyone to give him a call, and you saw his ratios rise dramatically. So I think that it's tough to guarantee from year to year, especially for someone who we've only seen one really solid season and say, I can trust him. Yes, there is upside, but I'm not sure that that's someone who I want to go and say, you know, I can blindly expect him to be able to give you great numbers. So
I totally agree. We saw, I mean, there's so many things spiked last year and went the right way. So to pay for that, to think that can keep going forward, is probably a bit foolhardy.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's more of just a philosophy in general that you want to pay for what's coming in 19, not what was done in 18.
All right, so our next player is Gene Segura. And, Ray, why did you put Segura on this list?
All right, now we know stolen base. I mean, again, you want to talk about philosophy, trends in the game. Stolen bases are going down every year. So that means you obviously need less of them to win the category, but at the same time, they're harder to get because you have less people stealing bases. So then what do? You don't not necessarily punt the category, but do you give the category a little less of an emphasis because guys stealing bases? Or do you say, hey, there's less guys stealing bases, I need to try harder to get those stolen bases? So to me, that's why someone like Segura ends up with an ADP of 65. Now, I like Segura as a player. I think at this point, what we see from him is what you get. He doesn't have any power. He's going to hit close to 300. He's going to steal 20 bases. He puts over 50% of the balls on the ground. He has a mid to high 80s contact rate every year. Going to steal you 20 bases, score 90 runs. He's batting second in a good Philadelphia lineup. So there's a lot to like there. But I think if you take him where you're taking him, you're missing out on you're missing out on a ton of power that you have to make up. And I think it's easier to go, you know, 20 rounds later and take somebody like a Greg Allen or somebody like that that's going to get you this Delino DeShields, or to kind of piecemeal through those 20 stolen bases through a more well-rounded guy instead of selling yourself short on the power. And the other thing is shortstop, at least through your top about 11 or 12, is probably one of the strongest positions this season. If you factor in the multi-eligibility guys like Bregman, Javi Baez, Gleyber Torres. So, I mean, to me, if you want to use shortstop to get those stolen bases, instead of taking Segura at 65, drop down to a Jose Peraza at 94, who's probably going to steal, say, the same amount of bases, do it with a little more power upside, and he's doing it 30 picks later. So for me, it's not about Segura the player. It's about the price on Segura.
What do you think of him, Scott?
I think it's very strange that there's such a high price on a guy that it's got to be driven by his batting average and his stolen bases. But this is not some like 40 steals guy, right? I mean, he had a great season in 2016 with the Diamondbacks, but you know, last year and the year before, he's been more like a 10 home run, 25 steal guy. Like, this is not a guy that's going to carry you in the stolen base category. He really stands out to me as, you know, he's not going to hit 20 home runs. He's probably not going to hit 15 home runs. He's going to steal hopefully 20 bases, but that number keeps dropping every year. He's not that old, but by the time the season starts, he'll be, you know, 29, which is, you know, younger than me, but not young for a baseball player. Hopefully he's going to score runs, but probably not 100 of them. Hopefully he's going to steal some bases, but not 25 of them. Hopefully he'll hit a couple home runs, but not 15 of them. You know, with the depth of the shortstop position, with, I think it's 13 shortstop eligible players going in the top 100.
Yes.
I am addressing that position much earlier than Gene Segura, oddly enough. It's weird to say that I'm addressing a position earlier than pick 65, but He's the 11th shortstop off the board. I am taking guys. If you want steals, you can get them elsewhere, especially if you only want 20 of them. He's a big pass for me. I agree with Ray on this.
And especially the other guy I mentioned, I mean, you're not going to get steals, but Corey Seager's at pick 87. Like, come on.
Yeah, if you want steals, go get Jose Peraza a little later. At least he might actually steal enough bases to really carry this category for you. He can really, you know, I'm not a huge Peraza fan, but, you know, he can hit 10 home runs too, except he can steal 30 bases.
Or take Tim Anderson, who could go 20-20 potentially, obviously not with the batting average, at pick 130, and then whatever its batting average.
Yeah, I mean, I like the batting average safety that you get from Gene Segura, and I know that later in drafts, getting batting average is a hard thing to do. It's sort of like ERA for pitchers. It's really hard to find anyone who's any good at it later in drafts, but I don't know if I'm willing to pay this kind of price just for some batting average safety, and you know, especially with the trade-off of there being not that much stolen base upside.
Yeah, I mean, I like Segura, but he's someone who I can't take that high because it's like you said, you know, if he's only going to hit me about 10 home runs and steal me 20 bases, and he's only going to have 70 or less RBIs, I'm basically taking him so that I can get someone who hits around 300, someone who gets me about 15 to 25 stolen bases and 90 runs. And while that's nice, it's not someone who I need to spend the top 70 pick on. It's just, it's like you guys were saying, and I'll say it for the third time. You guys can easily get Peraza two rounds later, 20 picks later, however many spots he is, and you guys are in a much better spot, I feel, than if you have Segura. And I like Segura. It just, he's going to have more value in a league like a points league than he is in a standard roto or in a head-to-head.
And that's a good point to make, just because if you are in a points league, you can disregard this a bit because of how much time, you know, how many times he puts the bat on the ball, even if it's not going super far. You know, I've talked about this before on some other podcasts, but you score points in points leagues by guys hitting the ball. And that is something that Gene Segura will do. He'll hit the ball. It just won't necessarily be very hard.
Ray, let's go into your last player. And that's going to be us talking about Malik Smith, who's basically in a similar spot to Segura. He's likely getting drafted because of stolen bases more than anything. Why is this a similar situation for you that you don't want to touch him because you just don't necessarily trust him and there's people you like him a little later?
I mean, he has an ADP in 97. He's gone as early as 66. So, I mean, clearly you're taking Smith because he's going to steal 40 bases. In fairness to Smith, right now, Roster Resource does have him as Seattle's leadoff hitter. We know that the Ben Brennis of Major League Baseball, Jerry DePoto, has more trades coming. So right now, the 2-5 is Mitch Haniger, Jay Bruce, Encarnacion, and Kyle Seager, which is actually pretty solid considering all the moves and transactions that DePoto made and the tanking, the rebuilding, whatever. But Smith is really the definition of a one-trick pony. I don't think he's a 300 hitter. The average isn't going to be a liability, but I don't think it's an asset like Segura. Right now, Smith is, like I said, slated as leadoff hitter, but you also still have D. Gordon on the same team, and they're literally the same exact player. So what's to say Smith starts off the season struggling, and they do a swap, and Smith is batting ninth, and Gordon's batting leadoff? You know, then he's going to lose 100 at-bats. He's going to lose a ton of runs. It's a lot of risk for a player that you're drafting literally for one thing. And the other thing is, you draft, say, a Jesus Aguilar or a Max Muncy or somebody like that, and they struggle or they get hurt or turn out to a bust or whatever, there's going to be somebody like a Luke Voit last year that emerges, and you're going to be able to replace that power or replace some of that power, some of those RBIs on the waiver wire. If you invest a good chunk of your stolen bases in Smith and he gets hurt or he underperforms, you're screwed at a stolen bases. You're not making that up. You're going to have to greatly overpay it on the trade market. You're not finding that on the waiver wire. So I don't necessarily like saying I'm going to take 50 to 40 or 50% of my stolen bases, expect to get them from one player, who's a little bit of a risk, and then invest a top 100 pick in him.
I've been saying that about Billy Hamilton for like 5 years. That's who we're talking about, right? We're talking about Billy Hamilton because it sounds exactly like what I've been saying. For
You know what, though? In Malik Smith's defense, Malik Smith can take a walk. And he can hit the baseball, which is not something that Billy Hamilton can do. What he really reminds me of, and this is not necessarily a good thing, is every time people have hyped up former Rangers leadoff guy Delino DeShields to me, it's been everything like they've said about Malik Smith. Oh, he can walk. Oh, he can steal a bunch of bases. Don't worry about the power because he's going to hit leadoff all year. You know, the thing about Malik Smith is for how fast he is, he's actually a terrible defender. And that's he's over in Seattle now, and that's a big field to defend, and he's not particularly good at it. And I wonder how much they're going to watch this guy run around like a little kid playing MLB The Show, trying to track fly balls in the outfield. He's, you know, as a bat, he is fairly valuable. He really overperformed on like the underlying stuff. You know, his BABIP is always going to be inflated because he's so fast, but it probably was a little overcorrected. You know, his xBAB, you know, his expected BABIP was about 20 points lower. He's always going to outperform his expected BABIP too by a bit, but probably not by that much just because of his speed. There's absolutely no power to speak of. You know, the Mariners, you know, their lineup, it no longer has Nelson Cruz in it, which is, you know, a big deal for a lineup that wasn't that good to begin with. I get it. If you're drafting him, it's because, oh crap, I forgot about steals and I need those. But you know, I could see Malik Smith still stealing 40 bases, but I don't see him hitting 300 again. You know, he's got some value in OBP because he can walk, but I don't know. He sounds a lot like Delino DeShields, who I just keep seeing burn people because it turns out he's not that good of a baseball player, even though he's a pretty good base dealer.
Yeah, I mean, Hamilton's at 173, so why not? I mean, again, why not just if that's what you're looking for?
He's finally got an acceptable price, and instead people are like, oh yeah, but how about this guy? Okay.
Well, it was nice having you guys both on my show, but since you guys like Hamilton, I'm going to have to kick you both off. Look, I get exactly what you guys are talking about with Malik, and he's not someone that I'm looking to necessarily go and buy on because, it's like Ray said, if there's an issue and he doesn't get the steals, you're not drafting him for any other reason. So he's never going to come close to being able to replace the value. And if he can't replace the value, you're not going to be able to replace that value on the wire unless you go and pick up someone like a Rajay Davis potentially and hope that he becomes somehow the Mets starting center fielder 2 days after you pick him up. And that's really the only potential way that you could ever get any steals of that high number. Scott, let's move over to your next player, and you wanted to talk a little bit about JT Realmuto. So why is he someone that is too high for you in ADP?
So, look, this is a lot of this is more of a strategy thing for me. JT Realmuto is going, you know, he's going at pick 56. He's going right next to the other number one catch, you know, the sort of the 1A, 1B catcher, Gary Sanchez. It's really difficult to, you know, for me, invest that kind of pick on a guy who actually doesn't provide a whole lot of stats. Now I get it. If you're using like standing gain points or you're any of those things, you're going to see that he's clearly in a tier above at the catcher position, because he's got a good batting average. He does a little bit of everything. I don't think he's going to steal bases like we saw a few years ago with the double-digit steals, but he might steal five, which is a lot for a catcher, I guess. I get all that, but you know, I am someone who's really embracing the fact that catcher's not that good, because it means that, you know, I don't need to worry about catcher early in drafts. What we're seeing with the catcher position is these like these globs of catchers being drafted all at like the same time. It's like every time you're in a draft, someone takes a catcher and everyone's like, oh crap, should I take one too? So right at the top, Gary Sanchez and JT Realmuto going in the 56, 57 range. And then we see this wait, and then at pick 112 for ADP, there's Sal Perez. And then a little after that at 128 through 143, it's Ramos, Grandal, Contreras, Molina, Posey. That's what I'm targeting. I'm targeting that sort of that second blob of catchers towards the back end of it. Because if you go and look at the numbers, how much, you know, is JT Realmuto 90 picks better than, say, a Yadi Molina, Yasmani Grandal, Wilson Contreras, who I know disappointed last year, but, you know, we've had hype for before. Even a healthy Buster Posey. I mean, these are valuable players that are sort of, you know, they're not, you haven't gotten into the wasteland of catcher yet. You can make that pick much, much later. And, you know, if you're the type of person that feels you have to have a catcher, you know, or you want the best catcher, why not take Gary Sanchez instead, who's being picked at about the same time, who might actually legitimately be a big time bat, you know, a 30 home run, 80, 90 RBI guy. Whereas JT Realmuto, the ceiling is, you know, the floor is great, but the ceiling's not much higher. So I can't make a pick in the top 60 with sort of a low ceiling guy like Realmuto.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like part of his ADP is part of the price is baked in that he's not going to be a Marlin next year or this year at this point. But I think that might be part of it. But again, I agree with you. I mean, it's also investing in a catcher at that price when you know they're not going to play every day. So, I mean, and honestly, I think Realmuto has gotten a reputation as a stolen base threat. And I'm not sure that anyone's going to call him that. And I'm not sure he's going to chip in more than a handful. And I'm not, and that's also not something that I'm going to necessarily build into my strategy and my evaluation of drafting a team. So, yeah, I mean, the batting average is better than most for at the catcher position. But, yeah, I would just rather wait.
It's amazing how much we talk about the stolen bases of Realmuto. He stole 12 bases once. And he got 8 steals a couple other times, but like this was never a guy that was stealing a ton. I mean, he did in the minors, but in the majors he didn't. And we still, oh yeah, he'll steal some bases. It's amazing. It's, I mean, it's just amazing to me, just the context of, oh, he steals bases. Like he, yeah, sorta, not really though, like, not enough to matter.
Yeah, but when most catchers steal maybe 2 a year, and he gets maybe triple that, it can be somewhat useful to get steals from someone who you're not really banking on. And if you have 2 or 3 other guys who steal 15 bases and he gets 6, it gives you a somewhat decent blend as opposed to having to go for someone who's a Billy Hamilton or a Malik Smith who you're relying on to get 90% of your steals. You can rely on maybe 3 guys to get 85% and then him to maybe get 10%, which isn't a terrible expectation when it would either be him or Yadi or Molina who actually gets steals and then everyone else gets like 2 or 1 or 0 for the entire year.
But still at that price?
I mean, I think that was a good point to make though, just because I one of the main reasons I don't like taking Realmuto is because I can take Yadi or Molina later and you'd be amazed at how close these guys are. You know, there's a difference in batting average, but everything else they do, it's still really similar. Like, yeah, Yadi Molina is 36, and you don't want to be the one holding the bag when his body finally falls apart, but it hasn't yet. He's still hitting 20 home runs, you know, well, he has for the last 2 seasons anyway. He's getting plenty of counting stats, and he's actually got more steals than Realmuto in each of the last 2 seasons. So, I mean, he's going much, much later. Why spend so much more on a JT Realmuto when you can just try to go grab Yadi later? Although I do like the approach of balancing stolen bases throughout a roster versus grabbing like a Billy Hamilton. I like that too. I just don't do it at catcher.
Yeah, I like to do it, which is why I'm down on drafting Segura and Smith. But I want to kind of do it organically. I don't want to do it where I'm necessarily reaching.
All right, guys, let's talk about David Dahl real quick. He's someone who has an ADP of 68. out of the top 100, and his ADP overall is 69.4. He's been taken as high as 46 and as low as 119. I understand that people can love Dahl and that he is playing in cores, but he's someone who I can't trust. He can't really stay healthy. And given the fact that they just brought in Murphy, they're saying that Rodgers may be able to compete for second base, which means that if he wins the job, they still have McMahon and Hampson on the on, or at least one of those guys in the majors. The other could be in the minors. There's just a lot of different options. They're talking about Desmond playing center field now, potentially Murphy playing first base every day. Is Dahl someone that you guys can really go and take as a top 100 pick without any guarantee that he's going to even come close to returning that value, right?
This is upside all over it. I mean, right now, David Dahl, per roster resource, is the cleanup hitter for the Colorado Rockies. So based on that, and based on what we think Dahl could do if he gets playing time and if he's healthy, which are two things that have not happened, then, yeah, he's worth that pick. But, like you said, there is no guarantee he's going to be the cleanup hitter. There's no guarantee he's going to play every day. There's no guarantee he's going to stay healthy all season. And there is no guarantee that he's going to do at the major league level what we think he can do, because we've never seen it. So to me, Dahl, I'm not even considering Dahl at this price. Again, yes, I know he hit 16 homers in 77 games last year, but he also strikes out a quarter of the time, and I have a hard time doing it. This could be something that blows up in your face, but I have a hard time doing it.
Do you know how many times he's had, like, even 400 plate appearances in a single season in, like, the majors or minors? It's like twice. This guy is.
I would have said once. So.
Yeah, he has struggled with injuries his entire career, and not only now do we have to make sure that he stays healthy. You know, it's nice to get a glimpse of what healthy David Dahl in the majors looks like. But not only is he going to have to stay healthy, he's going to have to like stay ahead of the Rockies refusing to play good young players. Those are two things I'm not trying to fight. You know, inside the top 100 picks. It's hard, you know, if you're taking him there, I get it. You're saying, oh, I think he's going to make, you know, 140 games, and that means he's going to get 600 plate appearances, and that means there's a ton of upside, and he's going to be a real dynamic player. Great. You go ahead and take that gamble. I'll use my top 100 pick on a guy who I know is going to get to 400 plate appearances in a season. That's kind of, you know, to me, that's the trade-off there. I'm not willing to take that kind of gamble. I'm a little conservative when it comes to playing time, and I just don't see how Dahl's going to do it, especially because if the Rockies really wanted him to play more, they would have quit re-signing the corpse of Carlos Gonzalez over and over again to play in their outfield. Dahl has been available to them. They haven't done it, and I don't know why, but I also don't see why they're going to change course.
It's also interesting, if you look on Fangraphs at the four projection models they have, Steamer is very – if you look, Steamer has him at 18 homers. The bat has him at 26. But it all comes down to playing time. Steamer has him for 110 games. The bat has him for 141. But like Scott was saying, do you really think that he's going to reach that? It's just crazy, and it's not something I'm going to bank on.
I mean, the only good news is that so far they haven't added any real random outfielders, and they've gotten rid of a few guys that had been keeping them down. You know, they got rid of Gerardo Parra, things like that. So that in theory leaves open playing time for Dahl. But again, I'll believe it when I see it.
Not someone who I can trust at pick 68 because he's not someone who I was ever fully invested in. Sure, there's a nice power speed blend and he plays in Colorado, so that can help boost his ADP and or his average and his BABIP and everything, but he's someone who I can't trust to go and pick that high because there's just nothing that I can trust and invest in with someone like that that I couldn't get from someone like a Joey Votto or potentially like a Marcell Ozuna, who I feel is going to be a healthier option.
Oh, I totally agree. The guy's coming off the board. you know, he's going in this chunk where a bunch of people are taking outfielders. And why take David Dahl when you've got Ozuna, Eddie Rosario, Yasiel Puig, Nicholas Castellanos, and Mitch Haniger and Justin Upton all going right after him? Those are all guys I prefer that I know are going to play, that I know can do basically what I think Dahl's upside is anyway.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it. Why am I going to draft somebody that might be able to do what I know someone else can do a few rounds later?
All right, Ray. Why don't you tell our listeners what you're working on and where you can be reached on Twitter?
I can be reached on Twitter at Ray_Kuhn_28. I am working on getting ready for the 2019 baseball season. We're going to make it the best season yet. I could also be found over at Roto Professor. I'm going to start writing a weekly piece soon with Friends with Fantasy Benefits for the baseball season. And also do not forget to check out our draft guide on Amazon.
And what about you, Scott?
Yeah, so right now I'm working on mostly keeping the few pieces I've got in our draft guide up to date. Again, we can't say it enough. You should go ahead and buy it. We're going to keep updating it all off season. So feel free to grab that. It's a great price. I also, during the season, I write a weekly piece on Fridays for DFS baseball over at Friends with Fantasy Benefits. You can also find me over at Pitcher List, where I do a couple, you know, weekly pieces throughout the season. And I have, you know, sporadic longer form articles as well.
And you can be reached on Twitter where?
Chusef Esquire, Chuseph Esquire.
And I can be reached at BBrandsFWFB. You'll be able to find me throughout the season on the baseball podcast and occasionally on the basketball podcast. From the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.